Welcome to this webinar from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair of the Business Marketing Club. We're a community for B2B marketers run by B2B marketers. We provide mentoring services, podcasts, newsletters, blogs, virtual and face-to-face events for the B2B marketing community. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. This is the sixth week that we've been running these webinars on how B2B marketers are responding to the COVID-19 crisis. In the UK, we're into the fifth week of lockdown. I spoke to some B2B marketers in Wuhan in China this week and was told that for them, it was weeks 5 and 6 of the lockdown that are the most difficult to be able to get through. So hang on in there and we'll get through this together. Today, we hear from four speakers on how the crisis is affecting them, their business, their projects, their working practices, jobs, marketing messages and marketing channels, and also their view on how it's affecting the profession of B2B marketing itself. As you listen, if you've got a question, type that question or comment into the questions box, starting your point with the first name of the speaker that you'd like to be able to address it. And I'll put those questions and comments to the speakers after we've heard from each. If you represent a business that has a B2B marketing project or work or job role that you'd like for me to promote to the community listening in today, drop some details in the questions box as well, and I'll mention it towards the end of the webinar. Please also flag in the questions box if you'd like to be a speaker at a future COVID webinar, or write a blog about this one, or find out more about the BMC. And I'll be in touch then after this webinar. Let's start then with a poll which can be accessed by anyone taking part in this webinar live on a computer. On this one, we want you to check any of the responses that apply for you. And the question is, which of the following areas of B2B marketing in your business have you seen a reduction in planned marketing budget for since the crisis started? Direct marketing, sales promotions and advertising, market research, PR and events. And if you just click through your responses to that, and we'll let the poll run just for a little while and then take a look at what you're saying. So select any of the elements there that apply, we'll give it a moment or two longer. Okay, let's shut the poll and see how people have responded, and the results should be coming up on our screen now. So the big reduction in terms of planned marketing budget, perhaps unsurprisingly, 70% are seeing a reduction in spend on events, 11% each on direct marketing, sales promotions and advertising, and 7% are seeing a reduction in planned marketing budget in PR overall, but market research, perhaps there are people on the call who don't really cover that area, or perhaps it generally is completely unaffected by the budget cuts since the crisis has started. So thank you for that. We'll be running a few other polls through this call as to understand how everybody is responding to COVID. Let's come to our first speaker now. Our first speaker today is Ruth Clark. Ruth is Deputy Managing Director of Six, which is a strategic creative agency working with long-standing clients such as Lloyds Banking Group and BP. Ruth is a qualified marketer of the CIPD and the CIM, combining her expertise to help organisations live their best culture by taking a fresh look at brand and employee engagement. Ruth, thanks for joining us, and over to you.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks for having me. Good afternoon, everybody. So what I was going to talk through for a few minutes before I hand over to my fellow speakers is really three core areas which I thought might be quite interesting. The first one is how the crisis has affected our own agency. The second is some of the things that we are seeing with our own clients. And the last thing was maybe some takeaways which might be quite useful, things to remember from a brand and culture perspective. So firstly, how things have affected our agency. Our proposition is centred on brand culture, and we want to support purpose-driven organisations to create real positive change. And I guess what we're experiencing at the moment is probably quite similar to what many of you are. Since the crisis has hit, the obvious one is how it's affected our team, but also in how we're now working with our clients. And as an agency championing brand culture, strong leadership and living values, for us it's been really important to practice what we preach, even in this kind of third culture that of remote working that we find ourselves in. So we wanted to remain really inclusive with the team, but also give full, strong leadership with clear messages to make sure that we're really accessible to the team. And as time's gone on, I think, you know, energy levels have definitely changed. We're now in a phase that's focusing more on making people feel connected, not just communicated to, and bringing in some of those sort of cultural norms that people are missing. It's also helping with productivity. I mean, agencies are really collaborative. We like to feed off each other's skills, but we also need to make sure that we're not moving around in silos where nobody knows what's going on. And that's quite easy to do when we're working remotely. So focusing on high energy and productivity. How we're working with our clients and the ways of working, we've had to adapt and change at pace, and we haven't seen any disruption in how we're working. But there's two main areas which I think we've sort of changed. How we're maintaining and growing relationships, and how we run our workshops, which need to be fully interactive. So the first one, we've really wrapped our arms around our clients and acted as quite a good support network for them. Some of the relationships that we have become a lot stronger during this time because of that level of support. And I'm talking about the sort of personal support as well as more work related. I mean, we're all facing the same challenges, we're all kind of in it together. And that's meant that sometimes calls and meetings have taken a little bit longer as we're finding out more about our clients' personal lives, but that's helping to kind of cement and grow some of those partnerships. But we've helped them react quickly, which is really important, putting in ideas in front of them to help their role and also help them deal with their own comms challenges so they can react really quickly. Secondly, we've made sure projects are running smoothly. It sounds like a really obvious one, but again, working at pace is really important to turn those things around. For example, we're working with a relatively new global client on their brand reputation campaign. And this is a really big deal because we've had to take them right back to what their own purpose is. And ordinarily, we would do that through interactive workshops face to face. So we've now been sort of transferring that onto Microsoft Teams, which has worked really, really well. It's exactly the same kind of workshop, still really interactive, still high energy levels. It's just keeping it a lot more sort of simple with some really clear instructions. And I guess we've managed to reach people that would never have kind of attended those workshops before because we're doing it online. So that's cool. Some of the things that we're seeing with our clients, sort of how they're delivering messages and perhaps some of their changes in priorities. The businesses we work with can't afford to stand still right now. They must really keep the lights on with their brand and their brand purpose, whether that's internal or external. We're working really hard with our BP client with their carbon offsetting program, which is continuing as normal. And we're also helping other clients to react to the crisis really quickly, such as Lex Auto Lease, where we're developing some key messages that support their dealerships with advice and insight that's going to help their businesses survive in the immediate future. So really helping to play out that purpose. In terms of digital transformation, I mean, with the larger companies, they're already quite far into that transformation journey anyway, but I guess this is now more pressing as the new normal will become more reliant on virtual, remote and automated technologies. And some of our clients have refocused their online campaigns and SEO strategies really quickly to help with content changes and increased traffic. So I think COVID-19 will be an urgent catalyst for businesses who have not yet matured into that digital transformation, and I hope it will continue. So lastly, before I run out of time, a few observations and takeaways, which I hope will be really useful. But more organisations, I think, will be needing to review their values going forward, either now or in the future. Because I think lockdown, sort of life under lockdown, has brought the concept of brand culture into ever sharper focus. There's a recent survey by the Edelman survey, which identified that brand trust during the coronavirus pandemic is a priority for all audiences, where I think 81% saying that they must be able to trust a brand to do what's right now, and how they treat their employees is actually quite a good indicator of that. So less about product reputation. So while there's been some real visible gestures of solidarity from brands like Louis Vuitton or Estee Lauder producing hand sanitizers, there's actually a much bigger message that B2B brands can take on to sort of look at building their trust. I think businesses have been pushed into communicating and talking to their employees differently, with more accuracy, more efficiency, more empathy and purpose, and hopefully it will result in some a better return, but we'll see. So that's kind of my thoughts for today. So yeah, back to you, Dave.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Ruth. If anyone on this call has got any questions for Ruth, make sure you put them into the questions box and start your question or comment with, hey, get this, Ruth. And we'll try and address any questions or comments at the end of this webinar. Let's go to our next poll question before we come to our second speaker. So this question, we've had one question that's focused upon marketing channels. This one focuses really much more on the working from home experience. So what's your biggest challenge for operating virtually and remotely under lockdown? And there are a couple of different options. Is it agreeing common rules, expectations, and behaviours for remote working across your team? Is it maintaining team well-being and productivity? Is it staying in touch with the business and with what's going on in the marketplace? Or is it collaborating and aligning with others? Or actually, away from business, almost balancing work and home life? What's the biggest challenge in operating virtually? We'll give that just a bit longer for people to be able to respond to. So far about sort of 65% or so of people have voted. So we'll give it just a bit longer. And let's cut it there and have a look at what the results are. So balancing work and home life is the big tricky one. 37% of you say that. And then 26% talk about the problem of staying in touch with their business and with the wider marketplace. 15% each for maintaining team well-being and productivity, but also for collaborating and aligning with others, whilst agreeing common rules, expectations, and behaviours with their wider team is the biggest challenge for 7% of you. Thank you very much for that. There'll be another poll a little bit later on. Now we come to our second speaker today, John Wotton. John leads European marketing for Yext, the search and experience cloud company, and has spent 25 years creating, innovating, and scaling B2B marketing and technology companies of all sizes. John, thanks very much for joining us, and over to you.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Ruth, for your talk, and I'm looking forward to the other panelists and their discussion as well. And thank you, Dave, for raising my tenure in this industry. It plays very well, actually, into what I want to talk about. So I don't think I'm going to try and use adjectives like unprecedented and uncertain. But I do want to talk about three things because we're here to talk about B2B marketing and not about everything else that we're all facing. So the three things I do want to talk about. One, I think. Out of all the bad stuff that's going on now, I think there is a real opportunity. And I want to relate that based on my experience and some of the things that I've been through and kind of where I see it now and how things can move forward, the opportunity. Because I think we have to take a silver lining out of all of this, right? There is a future. There is life after all this. And, you know, there now is that there's always an opportunity chance. The second thing is just in line with some of the things that have been said already. And I know on previous podcasts, just a quick word on how we're thinking about things here and how we're structuring teams, a bit aligned to some of the questions that you had just then. And I think as well, just remembering where marketing can play, where B2B marketing can play, because I think often we get channeled down into one specific area. And I think, again, there's an opportunity for us as a profession. So firstly, on that first thing, I guess the opportunity shift. I mean, the way B2B marketing is involved, I got into it in, dare I say, the mid-90s, the late 90s. At that point, all that time ago, it sounds a long time ago, but we're still talking about the same things now. We're talking about then about one-to-one marketing, Patricia Siebold, Peppers and Rogers. It was all about building these wonderful personalized experiences. And 2020, we're still talking about the same thing, but there was a bold ambition to do that. And, you know, a lot of technology came around that time. And, you know, I was there in the whole dot-com boom. And, you know, that was quite a catastrophic kind of period if you're in tech at that time. You know, we grew and collapsed very quickly in a lot of tech companies. But what I saw out of that period, what came out of that period really was the rise of CRM. Salesforce.com came to market in that time period. And now, of course, it's like the byword for customer relationship marketing. But the idea of the during that time, which was catastrophic for other reasons, there was a drive to get a better view of our customer in our customer databases. And then, you know, if I think about, you know, more recently in 2008, when we had the financial crisis, which again affected us, you know, in a lot of different ways to what we're going through now, but still was something which was quite devastating for many businesses and our livelihoods. That was the time in which actually I got first to get on board in marketing automation. In fact, I was one of the beta customers for Marketo. And Marketo came to market in 2007, 2008, right at the height of the crisis. And actually, that was another shift for us as marketers to take advantage of the ability to finally automate at scale a lot of the things we needed to do. So I think that sort of also reflects the where we are now with the shift of what we're trying to do in marketing. We've seen the ability to automate and put in technology to manage our back end. We've got the ability now to automate a lot of our communications. But now I think over the last few years, we've all been thinking about the experience. And really for a lot of consumers, depending on your market, whether you're B2B, high-end enterprise, or maybe mid-market and more emotional, you know, purchases, more and more it's about the experience. And you can have the most amazing product, but if you don't have a great experience, then customers are just gonna pass and go to someone else. And I think, you know, we've always tried in marketing to be that function that is the voice of the customer, understands the customer. You know, we talk about things about relating, empathizing, building emotional connection. And I think as a profession, you know, if we can't do that right now in this current moment, then we have no chance. Because, you know, you're often give these kind of you know, statements like, we understand what you're going through, we can relate to what you're doing. We really can relate to what our customers are going through, because we're going through, every one of us, exactly the same thing. So I think there's a real opportunity now for us to get right that empathy and emotional connection, because we really are all, you know, going through the same situation. So we can do whatever we want. I always say in technology, just because you can doesn't mean you should. We can automate anything we want. We know that. I think more, you know, the moment for us now is to think about, you know, the content that we're describing, thinking about how we express that, our tone of voice, what our brand values want to be. And, you know, I think in the context of that, it's not just about broadcasting, but building that relationship. So I think there's a real opportunity for us now to really, really go deep on thinking about the experience, and also then thinking about, are we there for our customers and prospects? Are we answering the questions that they want to ask when they need to do it? And, you know, are we really owning the kind of official, you know, kind of view of that? Because many brands, certainly more high profile brands, other sources are taking responsibility for that. So does our communications really convey what we're all about? Does our website really convey answers to the questions that our customers and prospects want to ask? So I think there's a great opportunity for us to look at that and really come out of this period, you know, renewed with that kind of trifecta of technology to manage our customers, technology to manage the communication, but really the right, you know, content stories and thinking about answering those questions that our customers want to ask. So that's the first thing. So I guess, you know, we've seen two big waves, and I think there's a third wave that will come out of this, which is really encouraging and you know, is great for us as a profession. The second area is just briefly about, you know, how we're reacting to all of this. And I think many of your panelists have talked about this on other podcasts. We've definitely shifted to more frequent, shorter connections. So for example, instead of having an hour-long weekly meeting, we have like daily 15-minute stand-ups or check-ins. So it just works really well, keeping everyone connected. There's no question now about having video conferencing on, right? I think we've broken that social barrier of seeing our home or our kids or the dog coming in. You know, I still laugh. That was kind of a big issue for people about even like a year or two ago. That's all gone away. Tools, technology to allow us to do that. As a company, we've invested quite heavily in really rolling out full implementation of things like Slack, which is a real great way just to keep in connection. And also collaboration tools, I think, are the next thing for us. We use, you know, again, not a shareholder, no advert, but we use tools like Asana, which are really great ways to collaborate when you're all working remotely. And really the theme that we have is iterate quickly, test and learn. And again, I think the current environment is really accelerating some things that as a profession we've wanted to do in the past. And then I think, you know, of course, we've changed our marketing mix. We've moved to more sort of virtual activities versus the physical activities and thought about that. But we've also as well shifted more towards working with our customers and making sure that they're getting what they need to be successful. And, you know, a lot of marketing functions, you know, mine included, have a heavy focus on customer acquisition. You know, we're much more focused on making sure that the customers who have invested in us are rewarded for their loyalty, are getting the value of what they need, and, you know, can count on us to support them. Because what we do basically is help businesses stay operational by they getting the information they need out there. So we work with government agencies, retailers, all of whom are trying to keep business operations, you know, going, and we really help in sharing that information. I also would say get scrappy. You know, a lot of the things that we may take time over doing, we now iterate very quickly. So research is a great one. You know, just talk to customers, find out what they're doing. You don't need to invest in massive long research projects. You know, just get that feeling, that real-time feeling, you know, getting feedback from customer and customer support and sales, your sales team, what are people saying on the phone? And I think as marketers, we can throw ourselves in more to those conversations and underpinning that really knowing your numbers. And then the final thing, as I'm running out of time, is really, I think, the broader opportunities for marketing, which is in moments like this, often as marketing functions, we're really thinking about, you know, the one P of the four Ps of the classic marketing. And what I love about marketing is some of the principles still hold true, and you can apply those to get you through, you know, periods like this. But often a lot of marketing teams have been forced into promotion. So it's all about, I've got a product, how do I better describe that to the customers and prospects we have? How can we do that, you know, through different channels? How can we change our story? How can we be more empathetic? But I think marketing opportunities think about the other P's, product, price, place, as well as promotion. And, you know, we're certainly going through that iteration. And as a business, we've looked at ways in which we can, you know, better deliver value, get the conversation going in a more customer friendly way. And so, for example, we've shifted or evolved our business to give, you know, a lot of value up front versus the old kind of classic technology way, which is introduce a sales organization and, you know, before a contract. So, for example, we now give free tools that allow our customers and prospects to evaluate the kind of things we offer without having to get into a conversation with us. So we launched a site called nowronganswers.com, which allows everyone to go on, look at their website, see how well it's performing, get a score and get some value out of that. And we launched that a week ago. We stood that up within 2 weeks, and we've had over 2,000 brands, you know, go through that process and really help them understand whether they're giving the answers to their customers that they need to do, because everyone wants to make sure that, you know, if you're a retailer trying to get office opening hours, retail opening hours, your policies, procedures, your government agency wants to give out information about COVID-19. You want to do that in a quality and assured way. And so we're providing those tools to do it. So I guess, you know, rounding that third point out is, as marketers, let's try and think about that. Let's, you know, provide some value in that area. How can we help the company rethink about the products, the price, the place, as well as the promotion? And I think there's a real strong opportunity with everything we've done as a B2B marketing profession to be, you know, really well positioned to get involved in that conversation. So those are my thoughts.
John, thank you so much for that. And if anyone's got any questions for John, please do enter them into the questions box and start your question or comment with John, and we'll get those comments to him. Also, if anyone's got any questions for Ruth, then please start your question or comment with Ruth, and we'll fire those questions over to her a bit later on. I know typically at the start of these webinars, because I've done a few now, people are quite light on questions, but now is absolutely the time to start firing those questions over to us so that we can get through to them as much as possible towards the end of this webinar. Before our third speaker, time for another poll. This one is around marketing content, and hopefully it provides food for thought for Ali, who we'll be hearing from next. So the question is, are you developing new marketing content to focus on new customer needs which have emerged since the crisis? This is a single possible answer. So you might say yes, and we're doing it using customer conversations that we've had since the crisis. Yes, we're doing it using market research that we've conducted since the crisis. Yes, we're developing new content, but we're not engaging with customers right now. Or no, we're not seeking to send out new content at this time. Or no, customer needs haven't really changed since the crisis began. So let's give people a moment or two to respond to that. So about 60% of people have voted. Let's give it a moment or two longer. Cool, and let's close it there and see what people have to say. So 55% are saying, yes, we're developing new marketing content, and we're basing that on the customer conversations that we've had since the crisis started. Another 19% are saying, yes, we're developing new marketing content, but we're not engaging with customers right now. And 17% are saying, yes, we're developing new content, but we're using market research to be able to formulate that. And you can see there that the vast majority of people, 90% of the people who voted, are in the process of developing new marketing content to focus on new customer needs. Thank you for that. I'm hoping that's food for thought for our next speaker. And excitingly, this is our first presentation aided speaker that we've had on this webinar. What can possibly go wrong? Our third speaker today is Ali Richards. Ali is CEO of Adisiant, which is a SaaS platform which allows organizations to plan and manage end-to-end customer journeys through content. And it helps the organization be part of the customer's journey, every step of the way, from developing and identifying buying needs all the way through to creating a connected experience. Ali, thank you for joining us, and over to you.
Hello, Dave. Thanks, everyone. And thank you, John. You set me up nicely, and so did you, Ruth. Thank you very much for your contributions. And thank you for the poll, Dave. Nice one. Straight into what I wanted to talk about. So some of what I wanted to talk about is what has changed for us, as you've briefed us to do so, Dave. And some of it is what I have observed. I've been attending these weekly webinars every week, and I've been listening to what people have been saying and the actions that people have been taking. So some of it is about what I've heard. So first of all, what's happened for us? As Dave always says on these calls, business has to carry on. But being British, I feel a bit guilty about when we're successful at the best of times. And right now, that's even worse. I'm feeling even more guilty for having any success. But I will explain a bit more about what I mean about that. I recently got a comment from a colleague of mine who said he saw a comment as a question to businesses. Who was the catalyst for your digital transformation? Your CEO, your CTO, or COVID-19? And we're kind of in that same position. We sit in the sort of space where what we do is something you probably should have been doing, but now you just have to as a result of what's going on. And as a result of that, we have seen a marked increase in interest in what we do. And in fact, we recently signed a partnership with a US marketing agency. The agency was able to save customers they were about to lose by using Adisient. So a little celebration for us. Yay us, we've done something that's working. It's made a big difference to that agency as well. So I'm gonna explain how that worked and come to what I've observed. So in one of these webinars a couple of weeks ago, and actually it was in the poll today and has been repeated a number of times, there are three things that are kind of main things that are going on. We can't do events anymore, obviously. We have to get back to our core skills with creativity, and we need to pull back to content that serves customers and discuss their needs in an authentic way. So those are the key things that people are saying. And if we pay an attention to those notes, and we're listening to our peers and taking ideas, and certainly I am taking lots of ideas from these webinars. Thank you again, Dave. But if we're doing that, then we need to understand our customers' needs. So the poll was very interesting to see, you know, are we retesting our customer needs and doing more research to say, where are they right now? And if we then tested those needs, is our content actually serving those needs? And how do we go about auditing it to make sure that it is serving those needs? So I'm going to swap over to doing a little short demonstration now. We'll find out if this works. Not demonstration. Don't panic, Dave. I'm actually going to do a drawing. So Dave, if you could just put your microphone on and say if you can see that.
I can, yes, that's great.
Okay, so I'm going to hope that you all forgive my drawing skills in doing this live at the moment. So we're going to do a little pyramid. We all love a pyramid as marketeers, don't we? And then we're going to do some divisions at the top here. Right, and now I've got to go to freestyle with a pen, so that's going to be interesting. So what we know about from the shape of a market, and as we look at it, 60% of our audience is not aware of any problems or what the problems are that you solve. They're not aware that they have them. 20% are aware of the problem. 17% are information gathering and actually trying to solve the problem and seeing if they can do something about it and maybe starting projects. And only 3% are actually actively and ready to buy right now in any given market. So that's what we're looking at in terms of the market division. So any given market, in every given time, only 3% of the customers are ready to buy right now. So let's look at that in terms of our marketing. And let's see if this works. Okay, right. So if we turn it upside down, and then I'm getting another color pen so I can highlight some things for you. Whoops, no, let's make that black, select that. Sorry about this. doing it live. It's all sorts of fun.
Ali, I spent 7 years at Adobe. I'd be touched if you were doing this for, you know, using an Illustrator. I'm very touched. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I'm using Illustrator because I use it all the time. Right. So if we look at this and we turn it upside down and we look at it as it represents our market, when we were doing our events, we were all down. Oops, let's get my pencil. And come on, right where we go. So if we look at what we were doing previous to COVID-19, we were looking at marketing to the 3% that are ready to buy now and some of the 17% that are information gathering. That's if we're being honest with ourselves. The reason I say that is if you've got companies and customers coming to events, it tends to be somebody who's already interested in you, knows you, or wants to find out some more. So when we're marketing at events, we're preaching to the choir. We're talking to people that we already know have some level of interest. So when we look at this pullback of content, we're saying that we're going for this bit up here. We're looking for people who are not aware yet of a problem. So excuse my drawing skills, but this piece up here is the bit where we're looking for needs-based content that is starting way back in the journey from the customer's point of view and starting to serve the customers from that authentic, understand their needs, let's provide them content that serves them. So that's where we've pulled back to from a content point of view. Obviously though, that creates a little bit of a problem because there's now a gap here. Apologize for my handwriting. There we go. So I'm actually going to switch that off now because you actually seen what I needed to show you. And I go back to the screen. How was that? So that you got a rough idea. I'm afraid I did practice it, but it didn't go quite as I practiced it. but the idea is that there is actually therefore a gap between that piece of pulling back the content to serve the customer's needs, but you're not then now connecting through to the bottom of the funnel and where you're trying to do your conversions and create marketing qualified leads, etc. So thanks to COVID-19, digital will now rule for some time, which means you need your digital journeys fully mapped and delivered end to end. This is no longer a theoretical luxury, it's a business necessity. And with budgets tight in the COVID-19 and looming recession in the world, your content needs to work harder and harder than ever, and every piece of content needs to be connected. And it's this idea of connection from the beginning of the journey to the end that we're actually solving those problems for businesses and why we're getting more interest. Everyone is trying to draw lessons from past recessions, but I'm not hearing much about people saying what's the same, what's changed, so that two can be brought together. From my perspective, what's changed is the ability to not simply engage people online, but actually take them on a journey. So using all the stuff that we've been implemented since the 90s, thanks for that, John. I also went through the fun of CRM in the 90s. Remember the Millennium Bug? That was fun. Ruth's nodding her head there, yeah. So we went through those things. But the opportunity we have now is there are a lot of technologies that have built up to this point that are now implemented, and we now actually need to be making better use of them, integrating them better, and breaking down the silos in our organization. One of the other things I heard in your seminars, Dave, was that it was easier for people to talk across teams in the online world. So they're actually connecting with people and having water cooler moments they wouldn't normally have. And that's wonderful that those silos are breaking down. We need to see the silos break down in the systems and the processes as well. And then it will enable us to create these journeys for our customers from that lovely content at the top of the funnel to getting them through to being a customer. And actually, even at the bottom of the funnel, the journey doesn't end there because we want them to be a loyal, happy customer. And so content needs to connect all of that together. So once you've joined a company, the content that's helping them become loyal, helping them understand how to use the product, all those sorts of things. So that's me at 90 miles an hour, and I think I've remained within my time limit and managed to draw something.
Thank you, Ali. I'll come back to take drawing lessons from you, I think. If anyone's got any questions for Ali, please do fire them up and start your question or comment with Ali. And equally, we're still after more questions for Ruth and for John, so please do fire those over to us as soon as you can. Time now for our final poll. This one's slightly different to the ones that we've had so far. And let me reassure you, however you vote in here will be completely anonymous. This one asks you to rate your organization's response to the COVID crisis on a scale of 1 to 5, with obviously 5 being amazing and brilliant and 1 being not so hot. So, let's see how people vote for this one. Rate your organization's response to the COVID crisis to date on a scale of 1 to 5. So about 50% or so of people have voted so far. We'll give it a moment or two longer. And let's cut it there and see what we've got. So 47% of you are giving a pretty decent response of 4 out of 5 in terms of your organization's response to the COVID crisis, which is really, really encouraging. 28% are saying 5 out of 5, which is pretty damn amazing, actually. And then 13% of you give your organization a score 3, and 12% less than a score 3. So all in all, actually, that's not a bad response in terms of people's views and impressions. It's always really very heartening. Maybe that's food for thought to our fourth speaker today, Jonathan Kahn. Jonathan is a global CRM director at Namecheap, an IT and services business. He's an experienced marketer specializing in developing strategies that drive commercial benefit, building teams that smile while focusing on the things that matter to the customer. Jonathan, thanks for joining us, and over to you.
Thank you, guys. Hopefully you can hear me. Can you hear me? Yes, good. Right, sorry, my children are hammering Xbox down below, and therefore there could be terrible things happening shortly. So let me just, there are two elements I want to really talk about. One is the employees, and then the customer. Let me just introduce who Namecheap are. Namecheap are second to GoDaddy in the US market. And if you've heard of GoDaddy, they sell domains, hosting, security, that sort of thing. 50% of my customers are US, the rest are around the world. And we act in that little gray area between the consumer and B2B. The people who cross over, the people in the garage, the people, the one-man bands, that sort of thing. That's the area we work in. And so this is an interesting discussion. And we're an e-commerce platform. We sell e-commerce platforms. That's what we do. The other thing that's really interesting is that we're a remote organization. 50 or 60% of all the teams are remote. So when everybody was saying, crikey, okay, we need to leave an office, well, we never had offices. So I describe us as a virtual organization. We're all independent contractors. There's 2,000 of us. And my team work at home remotely. I've got people in the UK, people in Canada, Ukraine, everywhere. And so it's an interesting area that everybody else was changing, whereas we were looking around going, okay, we do this, and we've been doing this for 3 or 4 years, and we haven't changed. But saying that, as people were adapting and changing and suddenly going, oh my God, I can work from home, our lives change as well, because the dynamics suddenly change within your household. Because suddenly I now have two kids working using my broadband and a wife using my broadband at the same time. And lucky enough, I was able to kick her out of here before I was on this call. And that changes the dynamic. So although it might have seemed that, okay, we can relate to everything that's going, you know, working from home is easy, but it does change. And the other thing that we have to consider as the individual, and the reason I say that is I have three of my team have had, let's say, the virus. Let's call it the virus. Luckily enough, nothing went in. They went to hospital, but let's say their symptoms were all over it. And if you have it and you work from home, there is a view that I still got to work. I still have to work. And it's really, really interesting that you have to start setting guidelines for your individuals. Interesting, the work-life balance came up when remote working from home. And if people are ill, they're ill. And the other thing was the mental pressure on people who are ill. Mental pressure of people who are ill in a two-bedroom flat in North London, no garden, no escape. That was intense. And don't worry about turning your computer on. It's not important. And I think that is critical, that we all talk about grand schemes and people talking about policies. But from a leadership perspective and management perspective, it's about the individual, and you have to adapt to that individual. What our company is very good, and it was interesting about rating your performance on COVID-19. What I really enjoy about our company is we put the individual, the friends and family come first, work is secondary. And that is, I find, really really interesting and different to a lot of places I've heard of before. And so we take that forward. So that was about the team and the employees and how we work. But the interesting element is how the market's changed. And it was really interesting to hear Ali and I have had conversations in the past about content, and John was talking about empathy and promotion. And I really like these two little elements that are going through, because we've changed I like to sometimes describe us as the DFS of we sell, always selling, always selling, always promotions. There's always 50% off, 20% off. Actually, we've changed in the last 3 weeks, we've changed our approach and we've gone down the content route, which music to my ears, because you cannot keep selling. You cannot just keep going money off, money off, money off. And suddenly, by putting content that is not promotion, but empathy, and developed for the customer, what we know has hit a huge vein of interest. And we've had blog hits 4, 5, 6 times the amount than we had in the previous month, and probably 12 times around the month before. And that is basically content that a customer can use now. It's relevant, it's timely. We've pushed it on social, Twitter, Facebook. I think we even tried Instagram, but those two cut through. And not surprisingly, they have gone through the roof. At the same time, we are in a lucky situation at them. And I say at the moment, because we have a point that people need websites. People staying at home are building websites. People have time. And so our numbers are going up, whereas other companies are struggling. So we are seeing not only content going through the roof, but we are relating that to email. Now, you read the information that's coming out of the email area, and emails are doing exceptionally well at the moment as well, because people have time. You sit down, I can read a few emails. And our open rate, click-through rate, sales, revenue, Google Analytics, again, are going through the roof. If you can link your content to a promotion at the same time, and I use your 3%. You'd be pleased to know I've read it, and I use it in the company I work for. But we are seeing not necessarily a link between the two, but we're seeing great results from content. We're seeing great results from email, and promotions are coming on. But slowly we are changing and adapting ourselves to say that actually content has a place to play. What we're struggling with at the moment, and this is being very honest, is measuring the impact of the content to the sales itself. and how we link the two. So Ali, I loved your whiteboard. I love a good whiteboard. I'm going to use that going forward, and I might be speaking to you after this. So that is really interesting, just from two elements that I've seen over the last 3 weeks. The next stage I think is going to be interesting for my business is we're probably me on the wave of people working being isolated is, okay, how do we look at when the isolation stops? And this is across the world, because people are now talking about Spain starting to unisolate. You've got China obviously coming out, America, I don't really know which areas they're in, but you know, you can imagine everyone's talking about coming out of isolation, whereas the different areas are talking about being in isolation. That is when obviously people will become unemployed, things will change. And that is, I'm really interested in how we adapt our content to go working from home, working remotely. Okay, now how do you build a business? How do you get your idea up and running? So that is the interesting part for me. And just, I think my last thought there is probably look after your employees, the individual, and on the content side and on the customer side, empathetic content that can drive awareness and interest, then you will drive, as Ali said, or drive sales at the end of the route.
Jonathan, thank you very much. That's great. And if you've got any questions for Jonathan, please do start your question with Jonathan, and we'll get to them. Let's come to the questions that we've had in so far. And I'm going to come to Ruth first with a question that Grace Pryor has sent in for us. So Grace says that it was interesting to hear that 37% of our audience are finding balancing work and home life to be the biggest challenge for people under lockdown. But do you have any top tips that could help people who are struggling? So Ruth, top tips for people struggling with lockdown. You need to put your microphone on.
That would help, wouldn't it? Can you hear me now? Excellent. thank you very much. That's a really, really good question, and one that we've actually been asking ourselves at Six as well, because I mean, we're an agency of 40 people, but actually picking up on what you've just said, Jonathan, around putting people first and practicing what we preach about brand culture and purpose, because this is a real opportunity for brands to make sure that they are really, really authentic in how they treat their employees. And so we did a piece of work for ourselves early this year that's, you know, what's our own purpose? And it came out, you know, that it was all about putting our employees first. And that does sound a bit kind of cheesy, I suppose, but it came out as actually completely true. You know, we've been around for 25 years and, you know, the founders are still very much involved. And, you know, our history is very much about that kind of work-life balance, if you like. So going back to what you were saying, Jonathan, just now, you know, from a organisation point of view, you know, definitely trying to wrap your arms around those employees and sort of really stepping into their shoes, because we're all in different circumstances. Some people have got small children. I've got two teenagers draining the broadband upstairs at the moment. And my husband's a teacher, so he's actually at home quite a lot because he's not working in school. So we're all in the house together. So sorry, I digressed a little bit, but that work-life balance, I guess, it is down to the individual. It's down to can you get your employer to really understand your own personal circumstances. We've introduced core hours and flexible working, which we will continue to do so after we go back to some kind of normality. So if you need to log on at 6, because that's when it's easier for you to do it, you're more alert, or it's just, you know, you're up early, those sorts of things, and you can get some stuff done in early morning. And then you've got the core sort of center part of your day when you need to look after your kids, or you need to go and look after your parents or grandparents or whatever like that, doing deliveries and volunteering, then that's absolutely fine. Don't beat yourself up about it. You can't be all things to all people. You know, and I spent a good couple of weeks at the beginning of this process really feeling the pressure, working 12, 14 hours a day, thinking I've got to do all this stuff and I've got to be here for everybody, whether it's my team, whether it's my family or whatever. And the news is obviously, you know, all around us all the time. So really take a step back and give yourself a break on all fronts. I mean, obvious stuff, right?
but good advice. I mean, almost what you and Jonathan are both saying there is, it's kind of the big rule from a business perspective is not to set a big rule and kind of bespoke the arrangements to each individual, right?
As long as it works for you and your team and you manage everybody's expectations, then it can definitely work. And I think the biggest change that every organisation is going to see now is how we just trust people.
Cool. Thanks
for
that.
Can I just add in there? Just one thing is get people to turn their computers off.
Yeah.
Just turn it off, because we all have it, and I'm probably at the worst, one of the worst, but turn it off. And then you have an end of a day, because the problem you have is you don't have that change between work and home life. Is that half an hour? You might be driving half an hour, you know, just turn your computer off. Lee, go for a run, walk out, just go away from your computer.
Okay, but don't go yet, because we've got about 10 minutes more. So I've got a question now for John. John, this question comes from Douglas Horn, who asks, what do you think marketers or businesses will or should learn from this experience and then adapt or take forward into the bright new world?
Yeah, I mean, the way I view it is, you know, a lot of people sort of say, you know, the world will change forever and all that sort of thing. I think the way I think about it is it helps us reprioritize on the things that are important. And for marketers and businesses, I think, you know, there's a lot of talk around businesses being sort of empathetic and, you know, like all these moments and these challenges, they really bring out, they don't bring out the best in bad businesses. Bad businesses, you know, will continue to operate the way they want to operate, and good businesses will operate the way they operate. There's very few people have kind of like a road to Damascus moment. It will just mean that we'll become very clear what's good and what isn't appropriate. So I think it does come back to that, you know, realizing some of the fundamental. It's not like, oh my word, you know, we're just going to do things totally differently. I think it's about understanding, you know, the thing that I major on is really, you know, coming back to really, you know, giving your customers what they want. And, you know, I think Jonathan was talking about it, not being too salesy and, you know, not just being a promo-oriented company that's always like 50% off all the time. It's about that kind of value exchange, and all these words sound cliche, but I think that's really it. It's about really, you know, bringing back to the fore, understanding what your brand is, the value you provide, your key points of differentiation, you know, relating to your customers, understanding their issues, showing them how they solve their problems, how you help them make money, save money, be a hero, you know, whatever it is, all the reasons. And it just focuses you back on sort of, you know, good practice. So I think those will come to the fore. It's not like everything will totally change. It will just, you know, we will just remodify, reacclimatize what we should have been doing following, you know, these moments where it becomes very clear what we need to be successful.
Thank you for that. I'm going to go to Ali now with a question from Neymar Omar. Neymar, I really hope I've said your name right. Humble apologies if I've not. Neymar asks, what are your tips, Ali, on creating content that will stand out in a saturated market?
That's a difficult question. I think that actually some of this comes back to your basic principles marketing that John was talking about, the four P's and all that sort of stuff. And one of the first things we're taught to do with marketing is go back to our strategy and understand our customers. So you need to dig deep about their needs. Then what I will say that you can do based on those needs is use something called BuzzSumo. BuzzSumo is a site which will show you what content is the most popular amongst people, and you can see what's trending to use that to get ideas. Another site you can look at is something called answerthepublic.com, and that will give you 2 free goes, then you have to pay for it. But under Answer the Public, you can put in your subject area and see what questions people are actually asking about that. So these are SEO techniques. These are things to say, you know, we're looking to provide what people are actually searching for. So that's the start of making it stand out. I think the second thing is then to just look at what else is out there and try and be different from it. Personally, what we've been doing is going retro. So we've been doing all our adverts in 1950s styles, headache pills, you know, but it's actually working for people because it looks really different to all the very slick, swish, very design stuff. It looks a bit more rough and ready. And if you see any of my stuff on LinkedIn, you'll see it kind of jumps off the page a bit. And that's what I've been trying to do with that. So not great tips, but hopefully those 2 things are useful for you.
Thanks, Ali. And this question I'm going to point towards Jonathan. It's a question from Michelle Jones. Jonathan and Michelle says, previously businesses piped up connectivity with tech being the core enabler. However, the reality was that office-based was the norm, with working from home pretty rare and seen as a benefit to working from home one day a week. With the forced working from home and with people having to live the connectivity mantra, is there a view that working from home one day a week won't be a rarity, but true flexibility will become the norm? Is there a new norm out there, Jonathan?
The answer, I think, is yes. I think there's basically, because we'll be here for, let's say, a bit longer, it'll prove the point to those doubters that it can be done. It'll prove the point to people who don't trust the people to work from home, it can be done. And you will see, and it was interesting what people were saying about productivity, you will see actually those people working from home actually can be hugely productive, if not more productive, than based in the office. Now, I think I've been working from home for 3.5 years. So some people are saying I've been self-isolating for 3.5 years. But the point being is that I think I'm more productive now than I've ever been, because it gives you time to think, it gives you time to work, and it also gives you time to reflect if you need to. So I think the answer is yes, because it's proving the point and it should prove the doubters wrong, but it totally depends on how it's managed and perceived. And I think that is the critical element. But to answer Michelle's question, I think the answer is yes.
Cool, thank you. And we're really quite tight for time, and there's a couple of other questions. So I'm gonna kind of hold my speakers now just to very, very quick answers, because I wanna try and get through as many as I can. So Ruth, Heather Hefner asks, she's seeing themes here of empathy and going deeper into true value and authenticity. Is she right there? Is that what she's hearing from this conversation?
I think so, definitely. I think, you know, we're talking about human connections at the end of the day, and it's not about pushing product and services in that kind of, I would say, left brain space, if you like. It's definitely tapping more into the emotions and that empathy. I think I can't remember who said it, one of my fellow speakers, but around the fact that we're all experiencing the same thing, so it's very easy to put ourselves in our customers' shoes. How long that will last for, I guess, is the question. It'd be great to think that we're not going to go back to some of the normal that we had before. Actually, I think this is a time now where there is more understanding and connections. I mean, even on a community level, you know, the clapping for the NHS, etc. It's like, well, you know, long may that continue. But from a marketing perspective, I think there's going to be great opportunity to be more creative, to tap into that empathy. So yeah, that, I think that's a common theme today.
John, do you concur with that? So a focus on empathy, true value, authenticity going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've spent a, if I think about the things we focused on getting all the pieces together for the last few years, say getting the technology in place, technology is, you know, cheaper than it's ever been before. It's easy for us to do amazing things at scale. Data, you know, we're all data geeks and nerds now, right? We all consume data. I think the final piece is really this focus around that, you know, thinking about the content. We've got the vehicles, we've got the opportunities to be in the right time, the right place. Well, what is it we're going to say? And that is all about, you know, the things we've talked about, building the empathy. And I think that's the final piece that, you know, that we can rotate back on. I think we've over-rotated on kind of getting technology in and data. And now this is coming back to it. And it's great because it's what we try to do in the 1950s, like Ali's ad, right? Trying to get headache pills or soap powder to jump off a shelf. It's still the same principles. How do we cut through, build that relationship, that connection, and stand out amongst the crowd? So yeah, that's totally what it's about. And they tell me millennials are really, you know, into authenticity. I don't know about that. I think it's about brands like us to do what we say. And, you know, people want to put a lot of trust in what we do. So it's, you know, behaving at that level, making statements that you can live up to, delivering on what you say. And it's that rather than anything else. So, yeah, I would concur.
Ali, can you help us with Sophie Norris's question? Sophie asks, could you top line, and I want you to be quick, could you top line walk us through how you map or move a piece of content end to end from a digital point of view? And how is that different from the way that perhaps we'll have done it before?
Right, so it wouldn't be one piece of content. You'd have a series of pieces of contents to take customers on the journey. First of all, you actually have to understand the buying process. So how do customers buy? What's their thinking process? You map that as a journey. Then you provide content that supports the customer in that step of the journey. So you might come up with, there's 12 steps to buying something. In each of those steps, you provide a piece of content that will actually help the customer through that piece. Or you can join a couple of pieces together in one bit, for example, so that you look across the whole journey and make sure you've got a good mix of types of content, and also that you're keeping them engaged through the process. Doing it by a content journey is more about actually not thinking of a leaky funnel. So you're trying to get to sustained engagement. So you're doing that across multiple channels as well. So you're keeping that as an ongoing process. That's a very quick answer. It's slightly more complicated than that.
That's good. I need to hold on your quick answers, though. We've got a question from Anna Lucia Nicio. And again, Anna, I hope I haven't muddled your name there. Anna says, I work in a tech B2B for food production services. It's very difficult to put the 60% of your pyramid in a customer journey because most customers are not really ready for us, for our services. So how can I best tackle the 17% and the 20% of the pyramid?
It comes back again, you've got to understand their needs, what needs map to your products or services. So come step further back, step away from thinking about your product or service, start thinking about your customer. What are their needs? How do you start a conversation on their needs and a conversation that's all about them? So the content is not about your product or service at that level. You've got to step back from your product or service and start talking about how they identify that they've got a need that your product or service then might be able to help them with.
Very, very succinct. And thank you. And we are out of time now. That's it. So thanks to our four brilliant speakers, to Ruth Clark, to John Watton, to Ali Richards, and to Jonathan Kahn, and to our brilliant behind the scenes crew of Louise Neal, Claire Sheriff, Josh Bench and Jay Neal. You can sign up now for next week's COVID webinar. It's next Wednesday at 16:30 BST. Or you can listen back to this one, or you can listen to our weekly podcast. This week, we're all talking about account-based marketing. Or you can sign up for our webinar on sustainability on the 19th of May, or get yourself a mentor to help through these times Or you can join our new upskilling series for furloughed marketers. It's called F2F, and it runs every Monday at 12:30, starting on the 4th of May. Details of all of those things are at businessmarketingclub.org.uk, or you can contact me at davestevensnow@gmail.com. That's all. I really hope you have a great evening. Stay safe. Thanks very much. Bye.